For years, the Israeli lobby has thoroughly penetrated this nation's governmental system, and the organization that has made the deepest impact is AIPAC, to whom even the president of the US turns for advice on matters relating to the Arab-Israeli issue. Most congressional actions affecting Middle East policy are either approved or initiated by AIPAC. To accomplish these feats for Israel, AIPAC Director Thomas Adine utilizes a team of hard-driving, able professionals and keeps them working together smoothly. He keeps policy lines clear and the troops well-disciplined. AIPAC's role is to support Israel's policies, not to help formulate them, so AIPAC maintains daily telephone communications with the Israeli embassy, and Adine meets personally with embassy officials. Though AIPAC has a staff of less than 100, small in comparison to other major U.S. Jewish organizations, it taps the resources of a broad nationwide network of unpaid activists. Annual membership meetings in Washington are a major way to rally the troops. Those attending hear prominent U.S. and Israeli speakers, participate in workshops and seminars, and contribute financially to the cause. The conferences attract top political figures including the Israeli ambassador, senior White House and State Department officials, and prominent senators, and AIPAC's outreach program is buttressed by a steady stream of publications. In addition to action alerts and weekly Near East report, it issues position papers designed to answer, or often discredit, critics, and advance Israel's objectives. The most controversial publication of all is an enemies list first issued in the spring of 1983 entitled The Campaign to Discredit Israel, which provides a directory of the actors' 21 organizations and 39 individuals AIPAC identified as inimical to Israeli interests. Included in the list are such distinguished public servants as former Under Secretary of State George W. Ball, retired ambassadors Tal Gitzili, Andrew Kilgore, John C. West, James Akins, and former Senator James Oberesk. There are also 5 Jewish dissenters and several scholars on the list. The Anti-Defamation League of Naboth also issues its own enemies list, Pro-Arab Propaganda in America, Vehicles, and Voices lists 31 organizations and 34 individuals. These books are nothing more than blacklists, reminiscent of the worst tactics of the McCarthy era. A similar enemies list is employed in AIPAC's extensive program at colleges and universities. Through action alert mailings, AIPAC keeps more than 1,000 Jewish leaders throughout the U.S. informed on current issues. An alert usually demands action to meet a legislative challenge on Capitol Hill, requesting a telephone call, telegram, or, if need be, a personal visit to a recalcitrant congressman. The network can have almost instantaneous effect. This activism is carried out by an elaborate system of officers, committees, and councils which give AIPAC a ready intimate system for political activity from coast to coast. Its 19 officers meet once a month to confer with Adine on organization and management. Each of its 5 vice presidents can expect eventually to serve a term as president. A large executive committee totaling 132 members is invited to Washington every 3 months for briefings. A national council lists over 200 names. These subgroups include the leadership of most U.S. Jewish organizations. The AIPAC staff is not only highly professional and highly motivated, but also thoroughly experienced. Director Adine worked in several Capitol Hill jobs, first on the staff of Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy, later on the Foreign Relations Committee under Democratic Senator Frank Church of Idaho, and finally as staff director on foreign policy for the Senate Budget Committee. Among AIPAC's 4 lobbyists are, or have been, Douglas Bloomfield, Ralph Nernberger, Esther Kurz, and Leslie L. Levy. All but Levy worked in foreign policy for a senator or congressman before joining AIPAC. Bloomfield, once an intern under Democratic Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota, worked for 10 years for Democratic Congressman Ben Rosenthal of New York. Nernberger worked for several years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and for Republican Senator James Pearson of Kansas. Kurz worked, in succession, for Democratic Congressman Charles Wilson of Texas, and Republican Senators Jacob Javits of New York and Alan Spector of Pennsylvania. The 4 divide up the membership of the House and the Senate. Actually, only a handful of legislators are keys to success, so each of the four lobbyists needs to watch carefully only about 30 lawmakers. They concentrate on legislators from the 12 states which have a Jewish population of at least 3%, New York, New Jersey, California, Massachusetts, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Florida, and Connecticut. The movement from congressional staff job to AIPAC also occasionally works the other way. A few veterans of AIPAC have moved to government assignments, among them Jonathan Slade, now with Democratic Congressman Larry Smith of Florida, and Marvin Fuoja, who was with Democratic Congressman Stephen Solars of New York, before he joined the policy planning staff at the State Department. Both Smith and Solars are members of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and both are passionate supporters of Israel. AIPAC has convinced Congress that it represents practically all Jews who vote. Columnist Nat Hentoff reported this assessment in the New York Village Voice in June 1983, after a delegation of 18 dissenting rabbis had scoured Capitol Hill trying to convince congressmen that some Jews oppose Israeli policies. The rabbis reported that several congressmen said they shared their views, but were afraid to act. Hentoff concluded, "The only Jewish constituency that's real to them, congressmen, is the one that AIPAC and other spokesmen for the Jewish establishment tell them about." An Ohio congressman speaks of AIPAC with concern, "But what distresses me is the inability in American policymakers, because of the influence of AIPAC, to distinguish between our national interest and Israel's national interest. When these converge, wonderful. But they don't always converge." After the 1982 elections, Thomas Adine summed up the significance of AIPAC's achievements: "Because of that, American Jews are thus able to form our own foreign policy agenda." Later, when he reviewed the 1984 election results, Adine credited Jewish money, not votes, early money, middle money, late money. He claimed credit for defeating Republican Senators Charles Percy of Illinois and Roger Jepson of Iowa, and Democratic Senator Walter Huddleston of Kentucky, all of whom incurred AIPAC wrath by voting for the sale of the WAC planes to Saudi Arabia. Dine said these successes defined Jewish political power for the rest of this century. The McCloskey case. Real debate is almost unknown in the Congress on the subject of aid to Israel. Most congressmen, fearing lobby pressure, carefully avoid statements or votes that might be viewed as critical of Israel. A young congressman, Pete McCloskey, in 1980, not fully aware of the rules, called for an end to the building of Israeli settlements in the occupied territory of the West Bank, which the US and all other countries except Israel considers as illegal and contrary to international law. To put pressure on Israel to stop, McCloskey wanted the US to cut aid by $150 million, the amount he estimated Israel was annually spending on these projects. In the end, tough realities led him to drop his plan to bring the matter to a vote. Representative James Johnson, a Republican from Colorado, and one of the few to support McCloskey, was aware of the pressure other congressmen were putting on him. Johnson declared that many of his colleagues privately opposed Israel's expansion of settlements, but said Congress was incapable of taking action contrary to Israeli policy. "I would just like to point out the real reason that this Congress will not deal with this matter is because it concerns the nation of Israel. Most committee action, like the work of the full House, is open to the public. And none occurs on Israeli aid without the presence of at least one representative of AIPAC. His presence ensures that any criticism of Israel will be quickly reported to key constituents. The offending congressman may have a rash of angry telephone messages to answer by the time he returns to his office from the hearing room." Lobbyists for AIPAC are experts on the personalities and procedures of the House. If Israel is mentioned, even behind closed doors, they quickly get a full report of what transpired. These lobbyists know that aid to Israel on a roll call will get overwhelming support. Still not aware of the political danger of his position, McCloskey, after a trip to the Middle East in 1979, concluded that new Israeli policies were not in America's best interests. He was alarmed over Washington's failure to halt Israel's construction of West Bank settlements, which the administration itself had labeled illegal, and to stop Israel's illegal use of US-supplied weapons. The congressman asked, "Why?" McCloskey had raised a provocative question: does America's Israeli lobby wield too much influence? In an article for the Law